Chapter 50. Verse 1. Joseph flung himself upon his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. Only Joseph's reaction to Jacob's death is reported. Did Joseph mourn Jacob's death more than all his brothers? Hamilton offers this thought: that Joseph alone flung himself on his father's face may be intended as a fulfillment of an earlier word to Jacob by God, that it would be Joseph who would close the eyes of his father. Genesis chapter 46, verse 4. It would appear that such honor is reserved beforehand to the survivor acknowledged to have been closest to the departed. Verse 2. Then Joseph ordered the physicians in his service to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. In Nahum Sarna's view, the Torah specifically mentions the role of the physicians in Jacob's embalming to disassociate it from Egyptian religion. Egyptians were embalmed by priests in a religious ritual, but Jacob was embalmed by physicians. It was, so to speak, a secular embalming. Verse 3. It required 40 days, for such is the full period of embalming. The Egyptians bewailed him 70 days. Verse 4. And when the wailing period was over, Joseph spoke to Pharaoh's court, saying, "Do me this favor and lay this appeal before Pharaoh." Verse 5. My father made me swear, saying, "I am about to die. Be sure to bury me in the grave which I made ready for myself in the land of Canaan. Now therefore let me go up and bury my father, then I shall return." Given that we have every reason to assume Joseph had always maintained a particularly close relationship with Pharaoh, see for example Genesis chapter 45, verses 16 through 20, it may be worth noting he did not go to Pharaoh directly, but made his request through a member of Pharaoh's court. Perhaps Joseph feared Pharaoh would be offended by Joseph not burying his father in Egypt. Joseph emphasized this was his father's request. To provide a modern example, it was reported that France's President Charles de Gaulle was upset when a prominent member of the French branch of the Rothschild family chose to be buried in Israel, a tradition among some Jews, rather than in France. Verse 6, and Pharaoh said, "Go up and bury your father as he made you promise on oath." Though Joseph did not make his request directly to Pharaoh, Pharaoh responded directly to Joseph. Verse 7, so Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the officials of Pharaoh, the senior members of his court, and all of Egypt's dignitaries. Verse 8, together with all of Joseph's household, his brothers, and his father's household, only their children, their flocks, and their herds were left in the region of Goshen. Verse 9, chariots too and horsemen went up with him. It was a very large troop. Verse 10, when they came to Goren Ha-Etad, which is beyond the Jordan, they held there a very great and solemn lamentation, and he observed a mourning period of 7 days for his father. The Hebrew word for seven is shiva, the term that is used to describe the 7-day Jewish ritual of mourning for the dead. Jewish law obligates Jews to mourn for 7 days following the death of an immediate relative, mother, father, son, daughter, brother, sister, spouse. This verse suggests the Shiva mourning ritual predates the Torah. Verse 11. And when the Canaanite inhabitants of the land saw the mourning at Goren Ha-Etad, they said, "This is a solemn mourning on the part of the Egyptians. That is why it was named Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan." Avail means mourning. Mizraim means Egypt. Verse 12. Thus his sons did for him as he had instructed them. Verse 13. His sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, the field near Mamre, which Abraham had bought for a burial site from Ephron the Hittite. Every time the Torah mentions the Cave of Machpelah, it reiterates it was purchased legally by Abraham from the Hittites. See Genesis chapter 23. It is as if the Torah foresaw the Jews' right to this land would be continually contested. Verse 14, after burying his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, and all who had gone up with him to bury his father. Verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrong that we did him?" Even though Joseph's brothers had lived on good terms with him in Egypt for the past 17 years, they were still worried that Joseph had not fully forgiven them for their betrayal of him, and that now, with their father dead, Joseph would feel free to express his anger. Verse 16, so they sent this message to Joseph: "Before his death, your father left this instruction." Verse 17, so shall you say to Joseph: "Forgive, I urge you, the offense and guilt of your brothers who treated you so harshly. Therefore, please forgive the offense of the servants of the God of your father." Jacob never left any such instruction, nor is there any reason to believe Jacob ever knew what his sons did to Joseph. Like many parents, Jacob was likely better off not knowing all the details of his children's lives. But then, what did Joseph tell his father happened to him all those years away? We will never know. We can assume the brothers fabricated this instruction from Jacob to stop Joseph from unleashing anger he kept in check while Jacob was alive. What makes the lie transparent is it makes no sense. If Jacob had been concerned that Joseph might seek revenge against his brothers, he, not the brothers, would have been the one to make this appeal to Joseph. But the brothers, still ridden with guilt, were thrown into panic by Jacob's death. Note that in their fabricated message, the brothers referred to Jacob as "your father," not "our father," to reinforce the gravity of the message. By invoking the God of Joseph's father, the brothers added a religious obligation to their message. You, Joseph, owe good treatment of us not only for the sake of your father, but of the God of your father. Verse 17 continued, and Joseph was in tears as they spoke to him. Telushkin suggests he cried because he realized that even 17 years after their reconciliation and all the goodwill he had shown them, his brothers still feared him. Verse 18, his brothers went to him themselves, flung themselves before him. Just as predicted in Joseph's childhood dreams, the brothers once again prostrated themselves before him. Verse 18 continued and said, "We are prepared to be your slaves." The brothers repeated the offer Judah made to Joseph almost two decades earlier, to be his slaves. Genesis chapter 44, verse 33. Once again in Genesis, what goes around comes around. The brothers who plotted to sell Joseph into slavery now offered themselves as Joseph's slaves. Verse 19. But Joseph said to them, "Have no fear. Am I a substitute for God?" Verse 20. Besides, although you intended me harm, God intended it for good, so as to bring about the present result, the survival of many people. Verse 21. And so fear not. I will sustain you and your children. Then he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. This reassurance of and kindness to his brothers is further evidence Joseph had turned out to be a truly good man. Of the many good traits among human beings, kindness, integrity, courage, loyalty, forgiveness is one of the most beautiful. That is why we have the saying, "To err is human, to forgive is divine." Verse 22. So Joseph and his father's household remained in Egypt. Joseph lived 110 years. In the Jewish tradition, the ideal lifespan is 120 years. Moses' lifespan, as recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 7. In the Egyptian tradition, it was 110 years. Egyptologists have identified 27 places in ancient Egyptian documents where this figure of 110 is mentioned, an example of the veracity and antiquity of the Torah. Verse 23. Joseph lived to see children of the third generation of Ephraim. The children of Machir, son of Manasseh, were likewise born upon Joseph's knees. Verse 24. At length, Joseph said to his brothers, "I am about to die." Logically, Joseph could not have been speaking to his brothers, since they, or at least most of them, would have died by this time. He was, after all, the second youngest brother of the 12, and he was already 110 years old. The Torah is likely referring to the tribes descended from his brothers. Verse 24 continued, "God will surely take notice of you and bring you up from this land to the land that he promised on oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Verse 25. So Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, "When God has taken notice of you, you shall carry up my bones from here." Joseph's words allude to the time when God will decide to deliver the Israelite slaves from Egypt. The book of Genesis thereby ends by setting the stage for the slavery and the Exodus, the primary stories of the next book of the Torah. Thus, at the very moment the Torah is preparing to introduce us to a terrible period in Jewish history, it is also assuring us that period will end. Unlike his father Jacob's burial in Canaan, Joseph recognized it was imperative he be buried in Egypt. His burial in Canaan would have called into question his loyalty to Egypt, and might thereby imperil his family's security, whose only claim to Egyptian hospitality was their kinship with Joseph. It is also likely Joseph, who owed so much to this decent pharaoh, did not want to insult him. For here, unlike the pharaoh in the next book of the Bible, was a good pharaoh. And the very fact that the Torah could portray a good pharaoh, given the suffering inflicted on the Israelites by a future pharaoh, demonstrates one of the great and original teachings of the Torah. The only division among human beings that matters is moral, not ethnic, national, or economic. Or as Viktor Frankl put it in his classic work, Man's Search for Meaning, there are two races of men in this world, but only these two: the race of the decent man and the race of the indecent man. Verse 26. Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Rational Bible, Genesis by Dennis Prager, performed by Tom Parks. Performance copyright 2019 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.